This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Well, it's one of the many changes that the province of British Columbia has made to housing legislation. And unlike other changes that have resulted in a massive upswing in new hotel construction, because that's what people need during a housing crisis, the Municipal Affairs, Housing Statutes and Amendments Act, just looking here, in terms of stratas, in terms of what is going on, we have an order in council, April 22nd, 2024. So that's yesterday. It brought into force changes to the Strata Property Act about depreciation reports. The province says stratas can no longer waive or defer obtaining or updating their depreciation report and must obtain a new report at least once every 5 years. They say this will somehow help with the housing crisis. I don't understand this. I've invited the president of the Vancouver Island Strata Owners Association, Wendy Wall, to come onto the show and talk about this. Morning, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Give us your thoughts on this latest change that's been announced.
Well, we've been expecting it for 4 years. As you said, the bill from 2020, Bill 14, did show us what the wording was going to be in the Strata Property Act as soon as the regulations came out. And, of course, yesterday, with, as you said, the order in council, brought these regulations out, which kicks in the legislation. So now we have this active, right? And it's not so much about the housing crisis at all. It's about taking care of our strata buildings, because so many of them have had deferred maintenance. They're falling into disrepair. And you never want to get to a point where all the owners are faced with a whopping special levy. You know, it's not uncommon to see levies of $30,000, $70,000. And it's because they've neglected something really important, like the building envelope.
I'm trying to figure out why this took 4 years. Can you help me out? Like, I'm missing something here.
It was a really important piece of legislation because a great deal of it was about giving permission to create regulations. And it's so much easier for government to create regulations than it is to change law. So that piece of legislation had a lot of things in it. And it basically said, you know, now someone's going to be able to make regulations when it's time, when we're ready, and it's faster, right? These order and councils can speed through much, much faster than actually changing an act and going through debate. So this laid the groundwork for that, and slowly over the last 4 years, we've seen different regulations come out that kicked in those different parts of the act that were amended in 2020. So for depreciation reports, it has a lot to do with our insurance crisis. As you remember, around between about 2019 and 2022, there was a lot of big increases in the cost of insurance for stratas. So this was something that the BC Insurance Council, the Canadian one, when they wrote their reports about the insurance crisis in BC, they wrote a lot about neglected maintenance in buildings. And that put a lot of pressure on our government to say, oh, we need to look at this. And so I think what they did is they looked at what our act says, the wording that they had brought in 2020, and then created regulations that fit with all of that. And this is, you know, we've been getting complaints.
Yeah.
Yesterday, a number of complaints from people saying, well, why can't we waive it anywhere more?
Yeah, because it costs money, right? You have to retain professionals. How much does it cost to do one of these reports?
It depends on the building.
Okay.
You know, like if you're a smaller building, it might cost $3,000 to $5,000. If you're a 200-unit building with a lot of facilities, tennis courts and swimming pools and you know, four levels of parkade, it depends, right? The more things you have to take care of, the more things that need to be in the report. But just to put this into perspective, Adam, if we look at Canada,
yes,
BC has been behind for years. We have eight other provinces, or is it 10? Look back at my notes, that require...
They say eight here in the release I have.
I think it was eight that require the reports and and don't allow deferrals, don't allow any way to get out of it.
Yes.
So this really just brings us into the modern day. You know, I think when depreciation reports became mandatory in 2013, mm-hmm. that the idea was that everybody would see how beneficial these are to your long-term planning and that people would get them done. No one ever expected that you would have a strata that would vote every year for 11 years to defer it.
How common did you say that was?
Well, it's been 11 years since these have been required, and
yeah.
So some stratas have literally voted every single year to defer and not get the report. So
do we know how many? I'm just curious about a proportion.
There's no statistics on that, but in terms of size, you have to be 5 units or more for this requirement to apply to you. So we have, you know, a little over half of our stratas in BC are less than 5 units. But that still leaves, you know, 16,000 or so stratas that are required to get these reports.
Wow.
So even if 10% of them haven't gotten them, that's a lot of buildings that have been neglected.
Yeah. So the regulation was changed yesterday. What are the deadlines for these reports getting filed?
It depends. So if you're an existing strata that existed before this coming July, so July 1st, 2024, we'll say, you know, pretty much anybody who's existing that's got those 5 units or more, the deadline is either July 2026 or 27, and it depends on where you are in the province.
Okay.
So basically, CRD, Fraser Valley Regional District, and Metro Van, if your strata is located in those areas, your deadline is July 1st, 2026. But here, so that applies to us here on South Island, CRD. But if you're in some other area of the province, it's July 2027. And I think the reason for these staggers is that you can't, there's not enough engineers, applied science, technology.
I was going to ask. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be bidding up their wages. Like, it'll be more expensive. There'll be a rush.
Well, I don't know that it'll be more expensive,
maybe not.
But there'll definitely be more people calling them, more people in the queue for them to come. And it is a little harder for these professionals to get out to the Gulf Islands and northern BC and even North Island. You know, so it gives a little bit more time for these stratas that are not in a metropolitan area to reach their professionals and get their report scheduled.
I want to say a big thanks to Wendy Wall for coming on. She's president of Vancouver Island Strata Owners Association. I was scratching my head trying to figure out this one yesterday. It makes a lot more sense now. Where can people go for more information and resources?
Well, at Vancouver Island Strata Owners Association website, which is just visoa.bc.ca, we have a really detailed blog post with all of the FAQs, basically all of those plain language questions so people can understand how it applies to them specifically. And the BC government also has an excellent site, the BC Strata Housing website, and they've got an updated page on this as well.
Wendy Wall, appreciate the time and the insight. Thank you so much.
Have a great day, Adam.
You too. Bye now. All right, folks, we'll take a quick break. Back after this.
Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070 and streaming on the iHeartRadio app.
I just actually posted a link to the District 62 Frequently Asked Questions page, or excuse me, District 61. Sorry, I got to stop doing that. 61 is Greater Victoria. 62 is Souk. Is crime increasing in schools? Point 11. Victoria School District says in the absence of historical data from police, it is not possible to determine whether recent reports of gang recruitment or other criminal activities represent a change in activity. So the honest-to-God position that the school district is taking is, yes, we've heard about that report with the guy that got caught with, what was it, 1,000 vapes or something in a parking lot adjacent to the school? I wonder what he was doing with them. It's impossible to determine whether that is a change. Maybe that's just a normal thing. I mean, I was just going to say, was politics always this ridiculous, or have we just gotten better at detecting it? I don't even know anymore. I'm sort of at a loss for words. I don't even know what to say anymore. Like I said, there's literally only one positive story that we've been covering lately.
Killer whale experts are confident about an orca calf's survival chances.
Our one good story.
If a rescue team can successfully remove it from a tidal lagoon on the northwest coast of Vancouver Island.
Still easier than all our other problems.
The female has been exhibiting signs of resiliency through the months she's been trapped in that lagoon. And there are now reports of the young orca eating supplied seal meat.
This was last night, just for the record. I haven't already played this one.
And it was observed over the weekend catching its own herring. A plan to catch the calf in a net was put on hold Friday to allow the rescue team to consider new options.
So the update in that story versus what we told you yesterday is that Brave Little Hunter, the killer whale, was observed to be capturing herring over the weekend. The whale, seemingly the most productive, well-functioning element of any news story that we brought to you recently. So good for the little whale. It's everybody else we need to figure out. Texter 107010 writes, "Hi, Adam. Just came from Prospect Lake School. One of the police liaison officers was here from Saanich. Kids were having a great time. Listen to this. They were jumping rope, asking questions. District 61 schools, it says, get your craft together." I like that one. That one's good. "And get those cops back in there. Thanks, as always." Adam writes the texter. Adam, another texter writes, "Parents are technically employers of the police and the school board. As such, why don't the parents' advisory boards invite the police in and ignore the school board's protests?" Says, "Police seem to have forgotten, or people seem to have forgotten, excuse me, these people work for us, not us working for them." I don't even know, like, I don't think District 61 actually, do they actually meet in person, or are they one of the only electoral bodies on the South Island where they're all still cloistered away in separate areas meeting over Zoom every time? Like, I know District 62, they meet in the school board chamber. I know that the municipal councils have gone back to, I know that there's, you know, from time to time, one of them will join remotely, but I'm just thinking here. Is District 61 the only elected body where none of them have even come back yet? They're all still in COVID mode doing it remotely? I was just thinking about that. Like, yeah. I had somebody tell me that earlier, but I wasn't sure if it was actually true. Let's see. What else was I going to say? I'm not sure where this goes from here. I know the judicial review was mentioned by Ryan Painter earlier as a possibility. That would take a lot of time, a lot of money. And the province, I guess, the province could fix this. Let's be honest. Province can fix anything. All of the powers that are exercised by any municipal politician or school board or anything are delegated by the province. The province can just simply change the decision if it wants to. They don't like to, because the whole point is that these municipal councils and school boards are supposed to be democratically elected bodies, and they're supposed to have a degree of autonomy. But if they venture outside where that degree of autonomy is envisioned, then, yeah. Texter 107010 writes the following. "They meet via Zoom, and they no longer allow participation from parents at their meetings. Deplorable." Well, I mean, what the hell? So they don't even meet in person. They say, correct, District 61 is always having meetings by Zoom. So it's not even like anybody can even attend. They're all in a remote location. Do they live in the catchment area? Or do they live outside? I don't even know. Like, it's just, this is weird to me. We have encountered some isolated situations where there will be a rogue council. But, like, this, a school district, when you have all the other councils speaking publicly saying they should reverse this, when you have the Solicitor General, Mike Farnworth, saying they should reverse this, it's just bizarre. Texture 107010 writes, "Adam, not having a PLO in District 61 and only having officers show up while arresting youth gives off the wrong message." Absolutely it does. It means that if you see uniforms, somebody's going to go to jail. And that's not the picture that we want to create for them, because it's not accurate. It says, "Giving kids the opportunity to learn to make friends and learn to trust police officers helps kids develop good relationships and to be good Samaritans. Says these kids can help their friends keep out of trouble also." It's true. Says, "No wonder there's bad blood for some kids with these wonderful officers. Wake up, folks. We need this protection." Another texture, 107010 writes, "Adam, with our school board 61, there are too many that have a big ego and don't want to lose face." I do think that ego has something to do with this. I do, and I said that earlier. Everybody wants to be the bold progressive that saw the right thing to do and had the vision and enacted the bold change. And then afterwards, things go better. So they're celebrated for their courage. The problem is they're taking a risk. And they know they're taking a risk. They got rid of the free supports, and now they don't have the budget to pay for the supports they would ordinarily have, let alone increase them. What a ridiculous, ridiculous outcome. Texture 107010 writes, by taking back the police liaison officers, it says, our children are paying and will continue to pay for this school board's bullheaded views. Texture writes, people need to remember next time you go vote for your school board, be well informed. Well, I mean, there's a lot going on, and people have a lot of different issues to follow, and yeah, I totally get it. I totally understand. This would be a super easy win, though, for the province. Like, out of all the things where they could just sort of snap their fingers and fix to show that they care about stuff like this, because there's all this speculation as to how much Dilaudid might be being sold in school bathrooms right now. I know, he's a fearmonger. Look, read the damn report. February, the review of safer supply practices here in British Columbia was clear. There are anecdotal reports of youth having increased access to opioids. It was the diagnosis of opioid reliance disorder, opioid use disorder, which is a high threshold that had not actually increased yet. But that doesn't mean that it won't in the fullness of time. Yesterday, Todd Stone on its feet, BC Legislature.
Clerk.
Oral questions by members.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, every single day, there's...
Every day, fix the school board.
More damning evidence that piles up against this premier's catastrophic experiment to decriminalize hard drugs like heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, and fentanyl.
Oh, by the way, there will be a fully functional school board on display tonight, I am reminded, at 3143 Jacklin Road. They actually meet in person because they realize they serve real people, not imaginary stuff on the internet, at 7 o'clock. And they're going to be discussing the 2024-2025 budget this evening. That's District 62. And they've got some pressures as well. But you know what they're not going to do? They're not going to be reckless in getting rid of the supports they have with West Shore RCMP. That would be ridiculous. There's no way they would do that. They're not going to do that. Souk RCMP, actually, is looking at, because they're shifting over to 24-7 policing, they're increasing the number of members that they have at that detachment. We did a show on that recently. They don't have a formalized SPLO position yet because the detachment doesn't have enough members to justify it. But what they're doing is they're finding more opportunities for those members to, you know, make an appearance, whether it's at Journey Middle School or somewhere else, just to foster that positive relationship with the kids out in Souk. And it makes such a difference. It's a good difference. So the District 62 School Board, and I know I was kind of hard on you the other day, just, you know, water under the bridge. Just be careful when you're dealing with Langford. It's not your fault. It's theirs. They get it. They understand that the community derives value from having kids have access to this support. There's no way they're going to throw it away because they're having budget pressures too. So the budget pressures themselves are not necessarily the bad thing. It's throwing away free supports for ideological reasons. That's what District 61 is doing. And it's simply wrong. I'm sorry. Where was I?
Explosive recent police testimony confirms the reality of taxpayer-funded drug trafficking.
I mean, that sounds so bad, but it is because they're diverting it. And we knew they were diverting it because it's in the report from February. It was BC's public health officer that commissioned the report, that produced the report, and it says that clients are selling their cleaner, safer supply hydromorphone to dealers because they're trying to buy fentanyl. So when they sell the cleaner pills, they have to go somewhere, right? Organized crime has been using them like currency.
And that decriminalization is causing chaos in our communities, from hospitals to coffee shops. The president of the BC Association of Chiefs of Police warns, and I quote, all the concerns we had have been realized, end quote. This soft on crime premier is ignoring police, and he's making communities across British Columbia increasingly less safe.
What do you say, NDP? You know, some people might think it's cynical and symbolic, but let's be honest, that still moves votes. You want to fix my school district for me?
It's time he adopts BC United's policy to end his failed and reckless decriminalization experiment. Will the premier do that today?
Mr. Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. The toxic drug crisis is a huge challenge in our province. We've got thousands of people dead. And up to a point in this place, we were unified in recognizing that this is a non hard as an issue. We're trying.
Not true. The all-party committee said there needed to be guardrails in place,
and the guardrails weren't in place, not in time.
To keep people alive, try to get them into treatment. An all-party committee did some important work. I have, and I know every member of this place has two concerns. One is, how do we stop the deaths? How do we stop the harm?
Totally agree. I don't want people to die. The question is, we don't know if our efforts to stop people from dying are actually having the incidental effect of making them die for different reasons.
And the injury to British Columbians overdosing on toxic drugs. Second is addressing the issues of public use, disorder in the streets, people struggling with mental health and addiction, using
open drug use. We're going to talk about this and more coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere.
This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Okay, I just had Lori Poppy get back to me. She's from the group Parents and Police Together, District 61. I'm trying to figure out where the hell the influence is coming from in terms of the school police liaison officer program. The BC Greens are for the program. The BC NDP is for the program. Mike Farnworth says he thinks it's a good idea. Victoria Council is for the program. Saanich Council is for the program. Oak Bay Council is for the program. View Royal Council is for the program. District 62 has this program. They like it. They're going to keep it. District 63 has this program. They like it. They're going to keep it. District 61 is the only one. Greater Victoria Teachers Association seems to be on side. But I was trying to map any more political support. I asked Lori Poppy. I said, what about the federal Greens? So Lori Poppy just went and checked. And apparently Elizabeth May is on the record or has told Del Manic that she also supports the program as well. So it's even the federal parties are on side, as far as I can tell. Like there is no mainstream political movement that seems to be against this thing other than the local teachers union and the BC Human Rights Commissioner. But the BC Human Rights Commissioner is supposed to be this voice that will take positions that are different from government, that are different from the consensus, to sort of, at least I view them as being that sort of conscience. That doesn't necessarily mean that the BC Human Rights Commissioner drives the bus and in spite of overwhelming Democratic support for a program, just decides that they're not doing it because of an absence of information. Now, this doesn't feel right. This is an easy political opportunity for the NDP as well, especially in the election year, especially when they're trying to keep Victoria warding off the Greens. Grace Lohr, of course, the incumbent with Sonia Firsinow running, and the Conservatives too. You see that guy? He's walking around. Apparently he's knocked on, I think it's 2,000 doors now. I see him on social media all the time. I think it was Rob Shaw noticed one of his ads on Twitter the other day. So they're doing a lot of legwork, literal, actual legwork. And that's how elections get won. You don't want to win an election. It's not from soaring oratory or great speeches. It's from knocking on doors and wearing out tennis shoes. That's how actual elections get won. But I digress. Where was I? BC Legislature. Wanted to talk about that. David Eby giving the answer. Oh, here it is.
Publicly, we passed a law in this place that has been subject to an injunction by the court, supported by the chiefs of police. We'll continue to work with police to ensure they have the tools they need to ensure public order in our communities. And we're going to continue to recognize that addiction is a health challenge. We get people into treatment, get them the care that they need. We can do both those things.
Well, I mean, getting shot with a crossbow is also a health challenge. There's also criminal influence that gets us there.
And we're going to continue to work to deliver for British Columbians.
What? It is. Where do you go when you're shot by a crossbow? You go to the hospital. You need health care. It's a medical condition. That doesn't mean that there's no criminality involved by way of others causing that to happen to you.
Most important issues.
House Leader, Official Opposition, Supplemental.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's high time that this Premier actually works with police, but also listens to police across this province. This Premier is actually completely out of touch with the chaos and the crisis that his deliberate policy choices, like decriminalization, are causing for British Columbians.
I'm wondering if decrim and safer supply are interacting and combining to create a larger problem than either would on their own, and that's why we didn't see it coming. Honestly, I can't help but wonder if the safer supply argument relies on there being rigorous policing to be able to stop that diversion and stop organized crime from capitalizing on it. And the decriminalization didn't expect the government to be paying for and not flooding the market, but putting into the market significant amounts of Dilaudid and of hydromorphone. I guess those are the same thing, just one's a brand.
And the chaos stems directly from this NDP premier's refusal to listen to the warnings from police, who now find themselves powerless to do anything about people who are smoking crack cocaine on a beach or a park next to a family, smoking fentanyl inside of a hospital that's full of patients and staff.
That's just nuts. I'm sorry, it is.
Shooting heroin on a transit bus or outside of a small business. Now, as Deputy Police Chief Fiona Wilson confirmed, and I quote, "These are all things that we raised prior to decriminalization taking..."
They did too, but you don't want to get too loud because then you get labeled, right?
"...in effect that we don't feel were adequately addressed," end quote.
So basically, like, the last 4 years of politics for me has been some politician who wants to make a name for themselves comes up with a really terrifying sounding policy experiment. The cops go, "No, no, that's a bad idea. That's a bad idea. Trust us. It's not going to work." They do it anyways. Everything goes to hell. The cops say, "We told you so." And the person who causes all the problem gets, you know, put in the premier's office.
Again, instead of
hypothetically
continuing to ignore police warnings, will the
I know they tried to fix it when it was too late.
Premier adopt BC United's policy to end his reckless and failed decriminalization experiment and do so today.
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you.
Whiteside.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. And I think we can't help but reflect today on the...
Yeah, there's Grace Lohr in the background right there. There's Farnworth, too. He's looking pensive.
The fact that...
Would you like to scribe video of the answer feed? Would you benefit from that, dear audience?
That we have just passed the anniversary...
Nobody looks happy, by the way.
...the 8th anniversary of the declaration of the public health emergency that is the toxic drug crisis in this province. And over the course of those years, we have lost over 14,000 British Columbians.
Raising the question, have our efforts made it better, or have they merely coincided with it getting worse, even though it's not our fault? Possible. But again, how does one not have doubt at this point?
Last year alone, we lost over 2,500 British Columbians. And we have come together with, not only in this house, but with our partners, with law enforcement, with healthcare, with public health, with municipalities, with advocates, with people with lived and living experience, to turn our collective minds to how we can use every single tool possible to try to turn the tide on this terrible scourge that is taking the lives of so many British Columbians. And we will continue to do the work with our partners to ensure that this project, which we identified, which was a call in part in response to what law enforcement asked, they came.
Law enforcement's always trying to play ball with policymakers. They're practical. They know it'll work. They know it'll not work. But they also know that they have to play ball because they could also be painted as enemies by the political establishment, and then everybody's worse off. The support that I have heard from law enforcement for policies like this is usually very intricate, and it's qualified with a number of very specific points. And I find it very often that gets painted as total blank check support when the cops knew all along if this, and this didn't get done, there was no chance it would even get off the ground. And in many cases, those guardrails were just not there, and we all know it.
They said, we need to treat this not as a criminal matter.
That's because we yelled at them and called them backwards if they didn't agree with us. Everybody knows it. See, I was part of this, right? I was one of the ones saying we need to do this. I have the intellectual, I believe, honesty and the introspective capabilities to look back at myself and ask myself whether or not this was the right thing to do. And I don't know anymore.
We need to treat addiction as a health matter. And that...
Yeah, but like I said, it's getting shot with a crossbow is also a health matter. You got the bolt sticking out of you. It's not like anybody's going to put you in jail. You're the victim. The healthcare system needs to treat you because you're the victim. What about the person who pulled the trigger? What about the person out there with the crossbow? That doesn't mean we do nothing about them. They are a dangerous person.
Speaker, is precisely what we are doing. We are making unprecedented investments in ensuring that people have a pathway to find the support for the treatment that they need.
And she's right, we are. We're spending more money than we've ever spent before. We should be incrementally improving. We're not. raising the question of whether or not we're having the impact we think we are.
We have just invested $117 million to stabilize the treatment beds that are provided by community partners so they can improve and stabilize their services. We've just opened 20 beds 2 weeks ago in Lanceville, dedicated for Indigenous youth in this province. We've opened 180 completely publicly funded beds earlier this year. Honourable Speaker, we need to continue to do every single thing possible in order to turn the tide on the toxic drug crisis.
I just want to say that there were some very, very unhappy members in the background of that video.
Member for Prince George, Vailmount.
Well, thank you very much. And doing everything possible actually means listening to the police in British Columbia. And I don't think Deputy Police Chief Fiona Wilson could have been any more clear. And I quote, here's what she said. Quite frankly, police warnings were not heeded.
That's true. We all know it. We all know it. The politicians will zero in on the four words from a police statement that implies that they support it or it's a good idea, and they will completely ignore all the qualifying statements that the police, as professionals who specialize in this specific topic, will give you. See, that's the thing, is like, it's not a mystery. The cops know how the drug trade works. It's their job to know how the drug trade works. They know who sells to who. They know where it comes from. They know what it sells for. That is not a mystery. We don't need government to reinvent the wheel here. We understand what's happening potentially well. The problem is government is unhappy with what we're seeing in terms of the outcomes, suggesting that we can re-optimize, redeploy, and get better outcomes. Every time they fiddle with it, it gets worse, though.
End quote. So before, families could call the police if people were using drugs like fentanyl right next to their kids, whether they're on a beach, a bus shelter, or in a playground.
Absolutely. And even if they didn't take the guy to jail, they'd seize his drugs. Yeah, you want to smoke crack in front of my little niece or nephew, buddy? You want to smoke crack in front of my son or my daughter? No, we're going to take your crack away. You're going to have to go buy more. At least that slows you down for the afternoon.
But now the police have their hands tied by this premier, and they are powerless to protect children from a person sitting right next to them smoking crack cocaine, meth, and fentanyl.
But God help you if it's a tobacco cigarette.
So, with the federal minister arriving on Friday, will this soft-on-crime premier finally listen to desperate communities and the police in British Columbia, adopt BC United's policy, and end his disastrous decriminalization experiment?
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Whiteside again. E.B. Rose, and he answered Todd Stone, but he's not anymore.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And I want to take a moment to appreciate the work that that our law enforcement partners have done in collaboration with our government, with municipalities, with our core planning table in the lead up to, and the work that they continue to do with us as we navigate this very innovative and important response to ensuring that we can remove the stigma and the fear from people who have addictions that they're challenged by every day, so that they are not afraid to reach out for health care, so that they are not afraid to reach out to help. Because that is the objective of decriminalization. It is to remove the fear and the stigma.
But stigma is what stops you from smoking fentanyl at the beach next to the family, because you'd be embarrassed to do that. Stigma and shame are social emotions that we use to accord ourselves with social norms and standards without punishment being needed. We self-regulate in this matter. To completely get rid of that, I think, is to completely get rid of a very useful tool that societies and groups have always used to ensure proper conduct. You should be embarrassed when you smoke crack beside a baby. There should be stigma to that. I think that you're a selfish person. Even if it's not harmful to you, which it is, even if you're cooking your brain, which you probably are, even if you're shortening your life, statistically speaking, significantly, which you probably are, at least those harms are limited to you. You probably stole the money to get that. At the very least, you supplied organized crime by buying it from somebody who we presume has links and got it from organized crime. So that's also a harm to society itself. Absent all of that, you should feel bad because you are a jerk.
You should feel bad because there's a nice family who's just trying to have a nice time despite all the challenges in the world. They're at the beach, and you're ruining their day because you're a jerk and you need to smoke your drugs right there instead of going somewhere else where you're not a burden on everyone around you like usual. No, shame can be a healthy thing. Shame can be a useful thing. It can make us better people. Maybe that's something to think about.
I want to be just clear with the member, because I know that all parties in this House understand the terms that we at one point had all agreed on in terms of the importance of this tool as an important tool in the toolbox to address the toxic drug crisis. I want to be very clear.
And yet, if you, as dad, decided that you know, skinny, weird-looking weirdo guy that's smoking the crack beside your son and your daughter, if you were to take matters into your own hands and teach him a lesson, physically speaking, you're the one that would get charged with assault. And we all know it. And you get prosecuted, too. How dare you put hands on that man when he's doing something that's not technically a crime because of David Eby's experiment?
Hear about this. School grounds, child care sites, transportation, federally regulated sites.
Texture 107010 writes, you never feel shame. Texter, according to the myths and legends, I never feel shame, I never feel fear, I never feel regret. I don't know. This guy that a lot of people describe sounds like he's a lot more fun to be than I am. So I don't think that's true, but whatever. People can think whatever they think.
Areas that were not covered by the exemption initially. We added playgrounds in parks, spray parks, wading pools.
Spray parks, the Matt Dell clause. I'm sorry, but that was his thing when he was running. We all know it.
Skate parks to ensure in response
members,
to what
members,
we were asked to do.
Members, let's not waste our time, please.
Oh, yeah, because this is such a productive...
Continue, Minister. Conclude.
In response to what we were asked to do with our partners in municipalities and in law enforcement, we amended, worked with Health Canada to ensure that the exemption was amended.
This is yesterday in the BC legislature, by the way. This is yesterday.
...amended to cover those areas. And we went further in partnership with municipalities and law enforcement to introduce the Public Use Act, which is very much supported.
Texture 107010 writes, you're clearly indoctrinated if you think it's okay to be violent against persons with addictions. Texture, I'm not indoctrinated with anything. I don't think it's good to be violent with anybody. But you know what? That guy smoking fentanyl? I guarantee you, if he thinks that dad's going to come over and break his hands so he can't pick things up anymore because he does that, he wouldn't be doing it. What I am telling you is that the criminal underworld operates without a justice system. It does so using brutal tactics and violence quite often. The problem is we're expecting regular participants in that sort of an economy to be nice. The problem is that we're thinking if we just stop punishing this stuff, then people who regularly get their drugs from actual literal gang members and organized crime who cannot sue each other, so they use threats of violence and other medieval methods instead, we think they're going to be scared of us shaming them. We think that we can just say, that's impolite, and they'll do it. No, of course not. There are things they are afraid of, but they're nothing any polite person is willing to do, nor should they be willing to do. And absent the ability of police to use as much force as necessary or as little force as necessary to seize that contraband, to seize those narcotics, to make the situation safe, we got nothing. So you just sit there while Buddy smokes happily down at the beach. You know, teach your children how powerless you are today. Isn't that every parent's dream? It's ridiculous. Anyway, quick break. We're back right after this.
If it's happening, it's here. This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
I'm just reading. Apparently, BC United has gotten a hold of a memo from Island Health with instructions on how not to interrupt people using drugs in hospitals or something. What the hell is going on here? I'm just sitting here looking at this. Okay, we're going to be listening to that through hour four. That happened earlier during the show. This is question period from yesterday. So we're going to listen to the tail end of the next few questions. We'll break for the noon news. And then after the news, BC United making good and seemingly contradicting reassurances we got from both the Premier and the healthcare minister, who said that you simply couldn't smoke drugs in the hospital. It wasn't allowed. You couldn't take drugs in the hospital. It wasn't allowed. There were rules against it. Well, if there are rules against it, then why are staff being issued guidance saying that they shouldn't try to stop it?
Anyway, it's coming up.
By law enforcement. They continue to share with us the deep concern that we not return to a regime that criminalizes people for having a health issue, a chronic and relapsing health issue, that we work together to find ways to ensure we get people the care and support they need.
Prince George Wilmot, supplemental.
Well, thank you very much. And let me remind the minister and the premier of this. This is the government that in their 2020 platform said they were going to fast-track decriminalization.
Oh, no.
Long before the health committee even started. And
that's true, actually. I'd forgotten about that.
By the way, the exemption from the federal government was granted 1 month into the work of the health committee. So it is time that this premier recognized that it is too late to be pointing fingers everywhere else.
That's a fair point.
British Columbians are done. They are finished.
Members.
They are finished with the discussion about decriminalization in this province. And the minister is the only person I know talking about this as, I quote, an innovative response. I haven't heard that from a single British Columbian. Public patience has run out.
Did you see Trudeau? He actually did an interview when he was here last week on this. And the language that he used I found really interesting. He said something akin to, well, when British Columbia did this, we supported them in doing it. Like sort of making it clear this is something BC did, that yes, Ottawa's here to support you because that's our messaging for everything. Whatever's happening, we have your back. You know how they are. But even he was clear at that point that we'll be here to support British Columbia as they work through this. But again, it was British Columbia did this. We're just here trying to help.
The BC Association of Chiefs of Police and the BC RCMP Deputy Commissioner have confirmed that the NDP taxpayer-funded drugs are now fuel for organized crime.
Why wouldn't organized crime try to take advantage of this program? I would be disappointed in organized crime if it didn't see the obvious opportunity for exploitation here. How did nobody think of this?
Not our words, the words of the Association of Chiefs of Police and the BC RCMP Deputy Commissioner. So, will this soft on crime premier listen to British Columbians who day after day are terrified about what's going on in their community, listen to police officers, and put an end to this disastrous decriminalization project?
Minister.
Thanks very much, Honourable Speaker, and I can appreciate...
I actually feel bad for Whiteside here. She's up over and over again.
...that it is a bit...
Farnworth does not look happy here. Well, I mean, they all know, right? They can all see it. The question is, how long do they hold on hoping that it turns around?
It's a bit of a sore point for the member, because given that, you know, I mean, I know the member...
Oh, don't do the gotcha.
I know the member sat and heard...
Oh.
...incredibly... moving and important testimony from British Columbians about their experience.
We want to save people. All of us do. The question is, we're not sure we are anymore.
About their experience, struggling with addiction, their challenges to reach out to healthcare, the degree to which people feel stigmatized and afraid. British Columbians feel stigmatized and afraid in the context of a public health emergency that has taken over 2,500 lives just last year alone. And we are not alone in this situation, Honourable Speaker. We know that all provinces across the country, all states, the entire continent is in the grips of a fentanyl crisis. We know that mortality has...
Pretty sure the cops could arrest somebody more easily down in the U.S.
...had dramatically increased next
Members.
Door in Alberta
Members.
And across and in Saskatchewan.
Members.
And I will say that in our ongoing work with law enforcement partners, they reinforce for us the importance of this step that we...
Oh, yeah? BC United apparently has found a memo about what to do if you come upon somebody using drugs in an island health facility. Hear about that right after this.